Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today I'm sitting down with Joel, Elise, Chloe and Jasmine, as well as Sandy Macquarie as well, who are all doing amazing things in research. So Joel and Elise are honours students at Griffith, and Chloe and Jasmine are currently studying their bachelor degrees, also undertaking some research as well. And Sandy Macquarie is a senior lecturer and researcher at Griffith. We're going to have a chat today a bit about what they are researching, how they got into it, the importance of it, and just to bring it about to students who are listening, so how they can get into research. So I'll start off by getting everyone to introduce themselves. So Joel, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Hey everyone. My name's Joel. I graduated with my Bachelor of Paramedicine from Griffith University, Gold Coast campus, midway through 2019, about July 2019. In February of 2020, I began my Bachelor of Honours, Bachelor of Paramedicine Honours. And I've just been doing that part-time for the past 2 years and set to graduate later this year. The research project that I'm currently undertaking under the supervision of Dr. Macquarie is essentially a mindful breathing intervention that has been introduced to student paramedics to see its influence on the their stress response during simulated clinical skills. That's a bit about me. And I've just been working as a registered paramedic in the meantime.
Wonderful. Thanks for that, Joel. And Elise?
Hi, my name's Elise. My story is pretty similar to Joel's. We were in the same cohort graduating in July of 2019. And I also started my honours February of 2020, and I have been doing it part-time, and I'm set to graduate end of this year as well. My project is also with Dr. Macquarie, and we're having a look at the perceived stress and physiological stress of students whilst on ambulance placements, and due to coronavirus, we did a virtual ambulance placement study. Yeah.
Awesome. And Chloe and Jasmine?
Cool. Hi, my name's Chloe and I'm a second year Bachelor of Paramedicine student, and I'm currently working as a research assistant with Jasmine and Dr. Macquarie.
Hi everyone, my name's Jasmine and I'm also a second year Bachelor of Paramedicine student, and as Chloe said, we're both working together with Dr. Macquarie on a research project. So basically what we're doing is a validity study on the AstroSkin biometrics shirt and comparing how valid their biometric measurements are in comparison to the core pulse monitor, which is used by Queensland ambulance paramedics.
Awesome, that sounds really interesting. So I guess I'd get Sandy to introduce himself as well, just in regards to what you do and how you've gain so much traction in research with all these students here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sandy Macquarie, and I'm a senior lecturer at Griffith, and I interact with all of the previous four students that have come online. I did a PhD on paramedic health and passed in 2019, and I had such a great time doing it that I wanted to make sure that I could both continue the research and have others help me continue the research and strike out on their own. The four people that have joined us today, and there's others, have listened to me when I said we can do some research here, it'll make a difference. And it sometimes it's small F fun when you do it.
Wonderful. And so I guess then from your perspective, Sandy, before I ask all the other guys here, but what is that importance of doing research, particularly getting involved in it as a student?
There's a couple of reasons. I'm a 30-year paramedic. So as I pass the torch to the people that are on the screen, and you and yourself included, I benefited only from the research that other people did, meaning not paramedics. So physicians, nurses, psychiatrists, psychologists, others who designed, led, and then made recommendations from research. So it's important now, we're a registered profession in Australia. We have a growing body of knowledge, but paramedics need to lead these projects. We need to design our own research agenda. And I'm not speaking about testing necessarily a new drug, but I'm talking about overall how we work and accumulate things that are of benefit to our patient. So that's my kind of my ethos. And my job, I think now in this kind of final third of my career, is to get paramedics interested early, even before year one, so that they can accept, those that want to can accept that challenge and design, deliver, and make recommendations on paramedic-centric and led research.
Wonderful. That makes a lot of sense. And it's quite important, I guess, there too. So I'll go around the group again, but I just wanted to ask the question for you guys. So I'll start with Joel. What's gotten you into research? So I know you said that you did it straight after your degree, but once you started, what's kept you in it, and you know, why have you loved it so much?
Yeah, so one of the main reasons why I got to research in the first place is because I wanted to know how knowledge is kind of created, and how, because going through uni, going through undergrad, you get taught, you know, you get lecture content, you get tutorial content stuff, and you learn all this stuff. But obviously, you know, that stuff is subject to change as time goes forward. So I kind of, one of the main reasons why I wanted to get into research and why I've gone on to do honours is because I just wanted to know where knowledge comes from and how it kind of develops. And if from that you can kind of start to get a bit more of a self-sustainable clinician. You know where to go get the information, you know how to interpret it, how to kind of really kind of pick it apart and critically appraise it, and you just become a lot more self-sufficient in your kind of own practice. So that's a main driving reason why I got into research in the first place.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's a really important part of evidence-based practice. So, Elise, what about yourself? What have you found to be the biggest motivator that you got into research, and, you know, what have you loved about it?
I think that ultimately, like Sandy came into our Griffith degree quite late in 2019, right as we were finishing our last semester. And he talked obviously a lot of, about research then, and it probably took me about 6 months or so to really understand what he was kind of talking about. And it was ultimately that I had an interest in student paramedics and the way that they were feeling during their placements, and obviously being through quite stressful situations and stuff like that myself on our placements and talking to a lot of my friends. It just seemed to be an area that was lacking research and also lacking awareness, that we couldn't tell from data the students what they were going into at that point in time. There's nothing in that space, so it was very important to myself and Sandy that came to fruition, if you'd like. And I think ultimately just having a bit of a personal experience with stress and the placements as a whole was my main driver towards that kind of research, and Sandy just made it possible.
That's really interesting, particularly you talking about like having that question and wanting to find out the answers. So that's quite interesting that you talk about that. I'll go into, you know, Chloe and Jasmine as well, like your motivator, and you guys are still in uni. So to be able to do that on top of your studies, what made you interested in doing that?
Yeah, well, for me, to be completely honest, the way I view research has definitely changed since starting this project with Jasmine and Dr. Macquarie. So at uni, I'm involved in the Honours College program. So my mentor that was assigned to me was actually Dr. Macquarie. And obviously he's quite passionate about research, so he did mention it quite a few times. But the thing that motivated me to get involved was actually more to do with employability. Everyone was telling us how competitive it is to get jobs and to be like a viable candidate. So for me, I thought that getting involved in research would kind of give me a competitive edge. But since starting it, I've realized that that was probably not the best reason to undertake the research, and there's actually so many more benefits to it than that. Now that's really at the bottom of my motivation list for doing research. Like, yeah, the benefits are just insane. Even like Joel said, makes you a better informed clinician, and yeah, the networking we've made is just insane, and it's only been a few months. So yeah.
I've had a pretty similar experience to Chloe, except I didn't come from the Honours College. So I sort of got interested in research towards the end of 2020, when the idea of Honours College came out as a potential like way to get into research. But that plan didn't work out for me. So I actually asked one of my other lecturers at the university whether they had any sort of research projects going on. And he directed me to Sandy. So basically from there, that's how I sort of started getting into it. But my interest really was sort of sparked from a few other students in my cohort also undertaking research. And I thought that that might actually be something interesting that I could occupy my time with.
Awesome. Well, those are great answers, and definitely make, you know, research sounds like that's really important to get involved in. And I know you all briefly went over what you guys were researching, but I'd really like to explore that a little bit more, because that's why you're all here. You've done amazing things. So again, we'll start with Joel. So you talked about the mindfulness techniques during stressful situations. Did you want to go through a bit more about your research and what you found?
Yeah, sure. So the a bit more in depth to the study that Sandy and I are kind of undertaking. So essentially what we did, we had it was a randomized controlled trial, simulated controlled trial. Essentially data was collected over 3 points in time. There was control about a week in advance, which essentially we just got the participants to sit down and rest wearing a HEXA skin suit, which measured a whole variety of biometric parameters, of which what we were focusing really on was heart rate, respiratory rate, and heart rate variability, and also G-force as well. That's more important for the simulated clinical skills. So after the control session, they then came back and we got them to do a pre and post. So essentially over 3 days, the first day was when they did the pre, the second day was when they got introduced to the intervention, the third day is when they got essentially retested again using the intervention. So essentially during the pre day, the participants were kind of asked to do 4 clinical skills, of which there is a peripheral intravenous cannulation, supraglottic airway insertion, infant BVMR, so infant back valve mask resuscitation, and CPR. And it was actually pretty interesting because the infant back valve mask resuscitation, actually we used a life cast model. We were able to borrow it. And that was actually pretty, it was very, very lifelike. We had a lot of sessionals who were working paramedics who stayed well away from that model. They didn't want anything to do with it, so it reminded them of some other jobs. It's very, very lifelike. And it was really interesting to see some of the students comment on just how they influence their management and just like their the way they approached the situation. So we got them to do those 4 clinical skills on the pre-day. And then on the intervention day, we got essentially half of them, randomized half of them to the intervention, and the 8 of them that actually were randomized. Essentially, it was about a half an hour session with a qualified breathing instructor, who's also an intensive care paramedic who works in New Zealand, who has a whole business set around mindfulness and well-being and like all that. So essentially went through the intervention with them, kind of taught them the importance of it, how to do it, when to do it, and all that kind of stuff. The specific intervention that what we used, actually kind of used two different forms or two different techniques. It's a bit difficult to explain, but essentially there was a breathing technique and there was a kind of a mindfulness technique, or like what we call like a body scan. So essentially they were taught to kind of use both of those in kind of like in unison, together, because we know from the research that you can use a relaxation technique and a mindfulness technique like separately, but it's really more beneficial when you use both of them kind of together. So he taught them those techniques. And then after that, in the post session, we got them to do essentially all the same skills, and we got the people in intervention group to essentially do the intervention during before and after those skills. And we saw the influence on stress response. And so the parameters for stress response that we were measuring were, as I said, heart rate, rest rate, heart rate variability. We also measured blood pressure as well. And we got them to fill out a questionnaire as well, the state trait anxiety inventory 6 score. So it was a short questionnaire just to measure how anxious they were in the moment. And the results that we found, it was actually pretty interesting. From a lot of the objective measurements, so essentially blood pressure, heart rate, rest rate, and heart rate variability, from all those measurements, we didn't see, between the intervention groups, we didn't see much of a difference. However, with the STAY-6, so with the questionnaire, we did, people in the intervention group did report to be more relaxed in the pre-session after the session. So that was a bit interesting, and I actually kind of lines up with a bit of the research I'm reading at the moment, because we only introduced the intervention at one point in time over 30 minute period. So it was only really, really introduced to them real briefly, but a lot of the other studies got them to practice it over a longer period of time. So that could be a major limitation of the type of study that's just through the design of the study. And essentially we did find though that all students with regards to the objective measurements of stress, we did find that even though they were doing skills that didn't require a lot of physical activity, which we measured through measuring G-force, like the infant bag valve mask resuscitation, supraglottic airway insertion, peripheral intravenous cannulation, they were pretty still during those exercises. And their heart rate and heart rate max and all these other type of measures, they increase quite markedly compared to their control score. So there is definitely something going on there that we just haven't been able to pick up on. We're going to have to do further research in the future to kind of pick up on that. But essentially, they're the main takeaway points from the study that I've been involved with.
That's really interesting. I didn't actually know that, you know, prior to getting into and researching a little bit about research, that you could actually do a lot of these types of studies. So that's really interesting that you got involved in that. And in particularly as well with Elise, when you were talking about how yours was also the perception of or how students had an experience on placement and all of that. It's interesting because a lot of people will view research as about some form of an intervention or a drug, for example, in that role in the paramedic practice. But it's interesting you guys are taking it from the actual paramedic or student as well perspective. I thought that was really interesting. And how did you get involved in that side of things rather than just an intervention or drug for the actual practice?
So I think for me in particular, I was talking with Sandy about a lot of these kind of stress studies, they seem to occur a lot in nursing and even in some medical students and that kind of form of healthcare, but there is very little research around student paramedics. It seems to be a very niche little group, and obviously there's not much available for us to base anything off. So for my study in particular, it's completely descriptive. We're putting hexoskins on students to see what's happening because there is no other data to form any opinions from, sort of thing. So it's very important for us to gather that baseline data, because otherwise there's no more data that can actually be, there's no more research that can be done from there until you start that pathway.
And do you guys think that's because paramedicine in itself is actually quite a young profession, you know, considering we only just got registered a couple of years ago and required, you know, all the information and research from different fields?
Yeah, most certainly, if I can comment on it. We're definitely kind of very, very much still in our infancy. As Sandy kind of alluded to, a lot of the research, I can imagine – while he was practicing, growing up, developing during his practice, like that would have been all conducted by physicians or nursing practitioners or like other professions kind of looking inside to our profession. And it's very, very important that we start to kind of become self-sufficient and develop our own kind of research code and to inform our own practice, because it is very, very unique. The environment that we work in isn't like any other environment that other health professionals work in. Just we're all different in our own way. So most certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll get you, Elise, to explain a bit about your research process, even though you've just given a brief introduction about it before, but it'd be good to go into it a bit more depth if you're happy.
Yeah, all good. So as I said, it's a descriptive study, and we're having a look at similar to Joel with the subjective and objective measures of stress. And we're looking at the students whilst they're on virtual clinical placement. As I mentioned before, we were hoping to do some research into students when they're on their placements with their various states for just a little bit more field kind of data than just obviously virtual, but coronavirus prevents those sort of things. So so we're having a look at the like subjective and objective measures that they're feeling, and then hopefully trying to compare their physiological data. So they wore hexo skins for, I think, a total of 5 case-based learning sessions. And they also wore their hexo skins for 5 sleeping nights. So they were all before the CBL sessions. And then an additional 2 other sessions was the second day sleeping and an off day, so that we had some sort of baseline of what they were feeling, you know, during a normal day. And we're going to have a look at how the data compares and start that baseline for further research essentially.
That's really interesting. And that was really interesting before, and you said basically you have to do this groundwork in order for, you know, other studies to be able to work on it in future. So I thought that was really interesting. You know, you don't have to start something that's already been done, but starting from scratch is really important.
Yeah.
And so I'll get Chloe and Jasmine, you guys are working together as the assistants as well. So what's your role? Talk a bit more about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so at the moment, our study is in its very early stages. So we recently got ethical clearance to start collecting data on participants. So we're in the process now of just starting to recruit participants and begin that data collection process. But just to explain like briefly what we sort of do in that is we're having 2 20-minute sessions for each participant, where they'll be wearing the AstroSkin shirt, which is kind of similar to the HexoSkin that Elise was talking about earlier. But basically what it involves, so they'll be wearing that shirt and then attached to the core pulse monitor. So we're looking at heart rate, SpO2, so oxygen saturations, and also blood pressure, and seeing how accurate the measurements from that AstroSkin are compared to the core pulse. So the AstroSkin is actually a device that's been made to be used on astronauts to basically provide constant non-invasive blood pressure and stats recordings so that they can monitor their vital signs while they're sort of in space, I guess. So we're just sort of looking to see how accurate that actually is compared to equipment that has been tested and is used on a daily basis by paramedics. Did you want to add anything?
I think that pretty much covers it. So our role as research assistants is we're mostly facilitating the data collection. So we sit there with the participants during their 20-minute sessions and we write down all the results. And I believe we'll be involved in kind of sorting through the data. And Dr. Macquarie will walk us through the whole research process so that hopefully in the future we can run our own investigations.
Yeah.
But we're quite fortunate to be working with the resources that we are. Like the AstroSkin biometric shirts are highly sought after. And yeah, that's why the experience really has been so valuable. But that's pretty much what our role is.
And I think another one of the main things I would say that we've gotten out of this whole working as research assistants is the networking opportunities. So not only networking with Sandy, but also with the other honor students like Joel and Elise, and then being able to go to other locations, working with the equipment and meeting new people, and just getting sort of an idea of what other options there are out there other than just going straight from university to working as a full-time paramedic.
That's really interesting. You bring up a really good point. And in particular, like for the students that are, say, in first year and they ask the question, you know, is this something I can do? Do I have to wait till I'm a final year, or do I have to wait till I'm graduated? You know, what would you say to them in terms of wanting to get involved in research?
You definitely could start like in first year. Like I would say once you get comfortable with university life and you've figured out like how you're going in that sort of area, then there's nothing stopping you from reaching out to your lecturers or any of your peers that you know from honours who might be doing some research and trying to figure out how you can get yourself involved, even if it's like working as a research assistant or even just observing the research, just to give yourself some exposure.
Yeah, I think also you can decide how large of a project you want to make it. And you can discuss that with a mentor or someone who's helping you with it. So you can make it a small project or a large ongoing investigation. You can make it like a pilot study that leads to further investigation. So it's really quite manageable for us. Yeah, we've been able to work around our schedules and our assessments.
Yeah.
And if I can add in as well there, that's a really, really, really good point that Chloe brought up. Because sometimes the studies that are sometimes the smallest or focus on the most basic things, they sometimes have the greatest, almost meaningful results for actual clinical practice. You don't have to have anything as fancy as a RCT or systematic review or anything like that. Sometimes the basics that can go so much more further. And I know probably Sandy can agree with me on that.
It's important to start somewhere. Anywhere.
I'll jump in just for a minute. I've been listening to the conversations and they're excellent. The ability for the challenge for the paramedic academic is to build that interest. And I call it creating a buzz. I used to think about research as a practicing paramedic. People would talk to me about it and my eyes would glaze over because I had felt no need for it. I didn't know about evidence-based practice, didn't really care. I wanted the radio on my belt and the free coffee at Subway. So as I started to move up the chain a little bit, I realized that not only is our evidence incredibly important, and not just about the drugs we get, but how we look after ourselves and how we progress as paramedics, it just kept coming back and resonating with me. So I thought at some point I needed to take charge. So the challenge to other paramedic academics, some of whom are further down this path than me, are to challenge the students every single time you can. In 2019 with Joel and Elise, if you remember the student survival toolkit, So the capstone subject built a resource to take with them on placement. Now, this was a research project. It was based on best evidence, went on to get presented on at the ACP student conference and other areas. And here's two of the people that were involved with it. Jasmine wandered up the hall and said, is there any research I can do? And I said, yes, absolutely. It takes extra time and it takes time out of my workload, but the benefits far outweigh, you know, anything that detracts from it. And it builds a buzz and the students talk, and Chloe and Jasmine and Joel spent a day most recently at Emergency Australia in Brisbane, looking at monitoring students and others in high fidelity simulation, immersive simulation with the hexoskins. So we can put a link in this afterwards, but I wrote a paper about it with a colleague of mine by the name of John Ray about how to do this, how to spark students to do things that they normally wouldn't do. And it's called Ed of Alignment. So it's about aligning research with paramedic students with their interests. And the bottom line is they should start in their first year. And A final note is in our trauma course, which I teach, we do what's called a mini CAT, mini critically appraised topic, and students are actually doing research. And the best of the best get sent to the CAT database in Nova Scotia, Canada. And we've been lucky to have probably 30 of our students publish in that database in the last couple of years. So those are all specific examples of how you can get into it.
That's really incredible because, you know, I, for one, I'm only just doing my evidence-based practice subject now, and I'm in my final year. And it's quite baffling because we learn about how to search basic things, searching databases properly for the particular type of question that you're researching or trying to find an answer to. And so I go, this would have been fantastic if I was a first year and first semester, because now I feel all the evidence I've used in my essays could have been bolstered completely by using those techniques. And so I feel like there was a bit of a missed opportunity there. Because from my talk with Ben Meadley recently about this research and his research into, like you said, the paramedic well-being, I hadn't had any of this knowledge beforehand, and now starting to know how important evidence-based practice is and how important it is to make, you know, shared decision-making for your patients and things like that. So it was quite interesting, and I think all of you who are doing research now who, you know, either, you know, just finished uni or you're still in uni is pretty incredible. And yeah, I think it would have been an amazing opportunity to have more students do that in first year or second year. So that's really awesome. Just to, I guess, cap off, so is there anything that you guys would love to get across to anyone listening to this about the importance of research, or just giving it a go, or doing one step or getting one step closer to it just by looking it up, or how they can get involved, or talking to a mentor? Have you just got something that you'd like to share to anyone listening?
Yeah, I'll go first. I'll stick mainly with the first point that I made in that, because I find that that's the one that relates most to me. And I feel like there's probably quite a few out there that you've kind of mentioned something similar, Alex, that kind of you want to know where your knowledge comes from. You want to know how you can inform your own practice. Obviously, you still have your own protocols and your own guidelines to inform your practice, but it's just another whole thing in itself when you can actually go online, look up systematic reviews, meta-analyses, you know, all these different types of literature reviews, and you're able to critically appraise each and every study, and able to take not only just take one study out and just cherry pick, but you're able to kind of see what is consistent across the board, across professions, different circumstances, and use that to inform your practice, obviously in accordance with the protocols and guidelines that you follow. But that's probably, if there's one takeaway point, I'd probably say that. And yeah, I know when I was at towards the end of my degree, I knew I wanted to do honours. I knew I wanted to get into research, but I didn't know how to, and I was a bit hesitant. I wasn't really sure. So if it wasn't for Sandy kind of taking that first step and kind of sparking that interest, I don't think I probably would have ever got back to doing it, because I know a lot of other people, they can be a bit more outgoing, they can kind of go out and seek those opportunities, but I know there are quite a few people like myself who are kind of like, they kind of stand back a bit, and they might be a bit hesitant. So having a supervisor or having a sessional or mentor in your life like Sandy, that is able to kind of just step into your life and be like, hey, you're interested in research, you want to know where your knowledge comes from, you know, where you want to make, you want to network, you want to make connections, you want to have an impact in the community and the paramedic community and the wider community as a whole. So I feel like that's also very, very important. If you don't feel comfortable coming forward and talking with a supervisor or a mentor or something like that, then maybe sometimes a supervisor might have to make the first step. I think they're the main ones for me.
Awesome. That makes a lot of sense. And in particular, when you said that, having that knowledge for yourself, it's like mastering your own craft. So I really like that one. And Elise?
I 100% agree with everything that Joel said, and especially that Sandy's given us such amazing opportunities. And I loved all of our mentors going through our Griffith University degree, but Sandy really highlighted the importance of research. And when you first like start your paramedic degree, they like, you know, why do you want to be a paramedic? And you're like, most common answer is, you know, you want to help people, or even if it's a health degree, you want to help people. But there are so many different ways of doing that. Like myself researching into student paramedic stress, I'm hoping that eventually when the research continues, that it's going to help people in the long run to understand what kind of stresses not only students have, but that flows into being a paramedic. You're going to have those stresses whilst you're a paramedic, and maybe even being able to develop support programs for students to learn and understand. Ultimately, you're helping people through that route as well. It doesn't have to just be, you know, you're fixing a broken leg or it. I think you have to have an interest in the research that you're wanting to do. And if you have an interest in there, just really try and find somebody who's willing to help you out, like Sandy helped myself and Joel, and really take you through the steps, because it is a very long process, and it's certainly not easy, and it's very self-motivated, which can be very, very hard at times. But if you have a really great mentor, he's really helped push us through, and I'm really excited to try and move that research forward and help people in the future.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I'll get you guys, Chloe and Jasmine, to talk about that as well.
Yeah. So for me, getting involved in research, I received so many more benefits than I ever realized that I would. So at the start of this journey, I thought I was going to sit down, do some research and write some sort of article and get it published, and that was it. That was all I was expecting. It was a little bit underwhelming, but I was happy to do it in order to make myself more employable and gain good skills, all that sort of stuff. But it's been much more exciting than I ever realized. Like, I'm working with these incredible individuals who are really like-minded and also interested in research, and we've done some incredible networking. And it has given me skills that will open doors to more opportunities that I would never have had I not gotten involved. So, yeah, I got a lot more than I bargained for. So, yeah.
Just to follow on with what Chloe's saying, I think probably one of the main points would be trying to get yourself involved in research to see what else is out there. I know that when you start university, like especially with Bachelor of Paramedicine, most students think that the end goal is going to be you'll work as a paramedic full time or part time. But there's more opportunities that are available, and there's more ways, like Elise said, you can help people other than directly through working as a paramedic. So even if with research, you're gaining skills, you're gaining critical thinking skills, you're networking, you're building yourself opportunities to actually do things that you may not have realized that actually were opportunities that existed before. So I think just putting yourself out there and asking your peers and asking whoever you can get into contact with, especially your lecturers, to get involved and get yourself out there. And I think just to add on to that, one of the main things that probably holds people back from actually seeking out those opportunities, especially with research, is probably the fact that a research project seems something like really daunting, that will require a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of data collection and all that sort of standard randomized controlled trials, like that sort of thing. But like Chloe mentioned earlier, it doesn't have to be a massive, intense study. It can be a really small pilot study that just gets you started, gets you those opportunities, and then you can decide what you want to do from there. So I think that's where the mentors sort of come in where we need our mentors to be telling us about the fact that we don't need to be doing massive projects. If we know that we can do smaller things, I think more students will be encouraged to actually try getting into research.
I was just going to add really quickly as well. I think as well that you say, same as what Jasmine was saying, is that it can seem really daunting, but ultimately your team is so massive. Like Joel and I keep on talking about like ourselves and Sandy, but I mean, Joel and I speak frequently and he's not even in the particular study that we're doing, but he's still helping. And then I have, you know, Steve and Mal and everybody else at the university that is always willing to help you. And they all have interest in seeing you succeed and interest in the research itself. So you've got so many people to lean on if you need help. So it's not as daunting as it seems, I suppose.
Well, you've all definitely opened up my mind to research and the opportunities that are available for it. And just, I guess, to finalize there as well, Sandy, did you have anything you'd like to add in particular about, you know, what students can do, or the final point about how students can get involved in research?
Yeah, I can. It's a couple of things. The challenges to the paramedic mentors, paramedic academic mentors, and I mentor academics to become mentors, as someone did for me. So that has to take place. So amongst the people that teach you, they may not be research savvy, but someone in the cohort is. Number two is, it doesn't matter what the project. And we recently had a group of students do some outreach education with a community group not far from here. And we made a study out of it. In the end, they did their education, but there'll be an article coming out of it. And the last thing I'll leave you with, Alex, is we have a project waiting for you.
I love that. That's amazing. Well, again, I can't thank you all enough for taking time out of your day to share your experiences and all your knowledge with our listeners. So I really hope that our listeners challenge themselves and be curious and really get involved in this. So thank you so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.